Welcome to episode 354 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther. And this is a show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Hey, welcome home, Richard.
Oh, I am so glad to be home. 34 miles is what I clocked at CES this year, which is about average for me there.
And by that, you mean you walked 34 miles.
Right.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah. And that was taking a fair amount of cabs to get back and forth to things on the first couple of days because it was raining.
Right. That we don't normally do.
Right. We normally walk it. A lot of it.
Right. A whole lot of it. Huh. Cool. Well, glad to have you back. It doesn't sound like you caught the plague or moth.
Yeah. You had to say that, right? All right.
Now
my desk is wood. I'm knocking on it.
I'm sorry. All right. So last week we did do a recording from CES. And when we did that, we kind of were jerks and skipped over all of our listener feedback.
Yeah, so we were tired.
We apologize to all of you. And we promised to make it up to you by reading all of your feedback this week. So let's just jump right into this. We've got a few messages. These were all sent in via email to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. This first one is from Alex. He says, "Hey guys, longtime listener here with a question. I've been happily using Seton's My Media Center app on iOS for a long time, particularly when I'm away from home. I have a VPN set up via my Synology NAS, and that allows me to connect to it from my iOS devices and still be able to use My Media Center. I recently purchased a Surface 3 tablet and promptly bought the My Media Center app from the Windows Store. When I'm at home on my local network, it works wonderfully. It's a great app. However, it simply refuses to connect to my home theater PC when I'm away from home, even though I have my Surface connected to my home VPN. I can remote desktop into my home theater PC from the Surface remotely, and I can even hit Seton's diagnostic webpage via the browser just using the IP address and port number. I tried disabling the Windows firewall for my Surface, but that didn't help either. Seton's support forums for this app haven't had a post in almost 3 years, so I'm hoping that you guys, or maybe a listener, might have an idea. Thanks." So my first question for this is, when you say that you can remote desktop from your Surface into your home theater PC, are you using the store app for remote desktop or like the regular Windows remote desktop app? Because I'm wondering if this is a problem with the VPN connection and Windows store apps. My next thought is, I know this seems silly, especially if you've already got VPN stuff set up, but if you really want to use this, why not just open that one port on your firewall and, you know, just allow it through the firewall from anywhere, basically? Unless, I mean, he probably has pretty serious security concerns. That's why he's doing a VPN, I would imagine. But it would work. It because that's how I do it. You know, I just have the port open on my firewall and it works. But I can understand if you wouldn't want to do that. Now, it just so happens that last week I was at a conference with the guy who wrote this app, James Montemagno, and I asked him about this and he couldn't think of any reason why this would be happening either, but he never actually tried it over a VPN, so he wasn't really sure either, unfortunately. Hopefully that will get you, you know, either the hole in the firewall or, I don't know, maybe one of our listeners will have a suggestion for you, because I don't have any other ideas for helping Alex out here. Do you have any ideas, Richard?
No, I don't. In fact, I've never actually tried to use this from outside the house. I only ever use this internally.
Hmm. All right.
All right. Well, that is it from Alex. So let's move on to a message from Ryan. And this is following up on our frequent discussions about Plex. Ryan says, "Guys, I wanted to give a little clarification on home videos in Plex. Generally, you'd use the category for when you don't have metadata or want to use your own. So you may remember that we had someone suggest that you could use home videos as a way of helping to get your TV series to load properly if you were having problems with that, like some of our listeners had reported. He says, as for the label, you can have it be anything. You could play with the scanner and agent settings to adjust which source it pulls. I recommend to follow the naming structure. It does make things easier. I'd like to see some of Richard's file naming examples. Just curious. And so he gives a couple of links that we'll have in our show notes. And they talk about how you would create libraries and how they recommend you should name movie files as an example. And then he says, I currently have MB and Plex scanning the same folder sources. I don't like to have it download its metadata and fan art to the directories. And there is an option to keep that out of there. So thanks for the addition of information on this, Ryan. I haven't had any additional time to play with Plex further, but I am getting more and more interested in Plex. One of the reasons being that I talked with the Plex folks when I was at PEPCOM last week. And so maybe I'll get a chance to check this out a little bit more in the coming weeks.
Cool. All right. And just for our listeners, PEPCOM is the PEPCOM Digital Experience. It's another mini event at CES.
Yes. Sorry about that.
All right. So last message for this week. We're going to keep this one anonymous. We asked you all to share with us your musical guilty pleasures, and we got one. It's we will say that this is from a male, but we won't give names or locations or any of that stuff. He says, my guilty pleasures are Kelly Clarkson's Since You've Been Gone and the two versions of John Hyatt's Have a Little Faith in Me, performed by Mandy Moore and Jewel. I've never heard any of these songs. I've heard of all three of these artists, but I could see how these might be considered guilty pleasures for somebody.
All right, I'm going to have to find them and listen to them, and I'll report back as to whether I like them, because that would be a guilty pleasure for me too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really follow Kelly Clarkson much. I've heard a little bit from Mandy Moore and Jewel, and they are talented singers, so I could understand that.
Yep.
Congratulations to you for sharing your guilty pleasures with us, and you know we'll continue to take those from the rest of you listeners. If you want to be courageous and share them with us and the rest of our audience. All right, so let's move on to some news for the week. This, you know, we're past CES, and most of our news for the week is not going to be CES related news, except for some stuff at the end to kind of catch up on other things that Richard saw after we had recorded last week. This first news story, though, is actually news from just before CES, and that's from our friends over at Silicon Dust. This is the latest update from them on their HD Home Run DVR. And Richard, you threw some notes in here, so maybe some of this is from your conversations at CES also, but there were some interesting pieces of information from this update from Silicon Dust. And I think the two that I want to hit on are that they've released a Windows Universal app for their HD Home Run View app, which is just their standalone app that will allow you to stream live TV from any of your HD Home Run tuners. It doesn't have any of the DVR functionality currently, but it does allow you to watch everything live. They've had a Windows desktop app for a long time. Now they've made a Windows Universal app. And by Universal, I mean actually the new style Universal app. So it's on Windows 10 and Windows 10 mobile. It works pretty well on my PCs. It's been basically unusable on my Windows 10 phone. But
it's also hard to know whether that's them or whether that's Windows 10 mobile itself just yet.
Exactly. Absolutely. And in their own update, they don't even build this as an app that you could use on your phone yet. I think it's just right. Kind of a side effect of it being a universal app. So definitely not slamming them for that, because hey, it's working great on the primary target that they've released it on. So just waiting for an eventual update for the phone side to get that working. And then the other interesting thing from their update was that they've hinted, and they did this from their update and in their tweets, that they expect that the Xbox One should support universal apps mid-year, and that their app would be one of them. So that's, you know, that's a big piece of the puzzle that we've been waiting for, is that we've been hoping to be able to use the HD Home Run DVR stuff, whether that be the software and the tuners or plugins to other apps, on our Xbox Ones. And it sounds like it may actually happen. Whether or not Silicon Dust was supposed to share some of that information, who knows? Maybe they're just guessing. I don't know if this is something that they know for certain, that universal apps will be on Xbox One mid-year, but they seem to be stating it like they knew.
Yeah, this is really based more on word on the street. So while I was there, I did get a chance to talk with Ted, their CEO. We talk with him every year at CES. And I, too, have heard this kind of rumor that we're expecting mid-2016 to be when they start rolling out the universal app support for the Xbox One. Now, does that mean it's going to start with some trusted partners first? Is it going to be open to everybody? Is there going to be some, you know, new store? Because can you imagine trying to find apps in the store the way it's currently designed? A lot has to happen before then. And we don't know a whole lot now, but they certainly built this app intending to support that platform when it's available. And that's great news.
So one of the other things from this update was that they've implemented a change to their guide. And the way that their guide works now, well, we've been used to how it wasn't really a guide before. It was basically just a list that showed up on the right side of the screen that showed what was currently on all of the channels. But now, if you're on a touch screen, you can swipe left and right or use your keyboard's arrows to go left and right to view what's coming up on the same channel. So maybe you scroll down to your ABC affiliate, and then you scroll to the right to see what's on at the next half hour mark, and then the half hour mark after that. And it's pretty different than what we're used to seeing from like the Windows Media Center guide, or maybe the guide that you've seen on a TiVo, what we typically call a grid guide. And Richard, you know why.
Well, yeah. And so, you know, this channel slice, which is what they call it, is a little bit unusual, as you mentioned. But for people who are coming from Windows Media Center, it really does mirror that kind of two-dimensional menuing that we have become used to in Media Center. So I don't think it's an unusual interaction model, but it's an unusual way to display the guide data. Now, why do it this way? Well, from talking with them, it seems as if Rovi, you know, our friends at Rovi, the ones that have that awesome data we're using now on Media Center, well, it seems as if they actually have the patents for using a grid guide pretty much locked up, so that if you're software and you want to present a grid guide, technically, you should be paying a license for that, because they have the patent for it. And that's got to be costly. Now, if you're a little guy, you can probably get away with not worrying about that too much. But if you're trying to make a big splash with a product like this, then you have to worry about it. So this is kind of ingenuity forced by restriction, if you will.
You know, I had always heard that there was a patent on the grid guide, but I thought it was TiVo that owned it. I didn't realize that it was Rovi.
TiVo has plenty of patents, but I don't believe it is on the guide. I think there is some guide presentation, like presentation methods that they've patented, but that's not just the core guide stuff.
Okay. So you also may have gotten some more information on probably the biggest question area for the HD Home Run DVR software coming up, and that's what's going on with protected content.
Yeah, and there's great news here. And the great news is that for their apps that they are creating, so the HD Home Run DVR app will be able to provide a fully protected content stream from source, which is the card, to delivery, which is the screen, all through software. And so for their app running on Windows 10 based devices, you will be able to access protected content.
That's fantastic news.
Yes, that is very, very good news. Now, what I didn't realize is that they are exposing the services that they're using to build this to allow third-party developers to also create front-end apps. So, for example, there's some TV viewer app on the Roku that will provide a similar viewing experience, but not the DVR experience. Those apps will not have access to the protected content.
I believe there's a recent Apple TV app also called Channels that's supporting the HD Home Run.
Yes, I think that is correct.
So that's probably doing it the same way then, would be my guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. Well, that is all really great news, and we eagerly await more news from the HD Home Run DVR guys, and even more so, access to the bits. I want to use this stuff. I want to check it out.
Yeah, and it's really slick. I mean, I have not had a chance to play with this at all as things have been made available to Kickstarter contributors. And actually seeing it in use, it is fast, it is responsive. It's just like you're watching TV from, say, Media Center. It just looks a little different. They've done a great job with it.
Nice. That is really, really good to hear.
All right. Well, let's jump into audio. Man, we started the week with some unexpected, really sad news with the loss, the quite unexpected loss of David Bowie. And so, like many people, I have been listening to a lot of David Bowie music this week. And if people on their Windows platforms are interested in how to get Bowie music, of course, all the stores are selling it. And because it's so popular right now, it has made its way to the top of nearly every store out there. But you can also stream it, including his latest album, his last album that came out just last Friday. So the new album, it's called Black Star. It's available for streaming on Spotify, and it's available for streaming on Groove if you want to check it out and decide if you like it enough. If you're the kind of person who buys it, then maybe you can go ahead and buy it too.
Wow, I didn't realize that this album just came out last Friday.
Is that crazy?
That's really crazy. Wow. All right. Well, that's great to hear that we can stream this on Groove Music and Spotify and other stuff like that. I'm not a huge David Bowie fan, but, you know, maybe, especially considering this just came out, maybe I'll give this a play tomorrow.
It's an interesting mix of his sounds. He has some of it very soulful, some of it very kind of I forget the right term for it, but you know, he often had kind of like a rock cacophony in his music, and he has that in some of these tunes. And then one of them is actually pretty jazzy. So it's worth a listen for sure. And then also, if you're into the Beatles music, of course, Beatles albums are now available for streaming. But in case you really want to own them digitally because you haven't bought them enough times over your lifetime, you can buy them through Microsoft's music deals. The Beatles albums, I think all of them, are now part of music deals. Now, you may be used to 99-cent deals or $5.99 deals, but you know, these are Beatles albums, and they've been out for a really long time now. So you'll only have to pay $8.99 or $13.99 for each of these albums.
Well, they're vintage, so they're worth more.
I just had to put this in because it's... Are you kidding me?
I guess it doesn't surprise me because the music deals have been pretty terrible since like December of 2014.
Yeah, that's true. Well, except for they did give away a bunch of albums for what, like 1 cent a piece or something at Christmas time.
Yeah, I think they only did that for like 3 or 4 hours, it seemed, because by the time I went to try and find them, they were all regular price.
I did get them. There were only about 2 or 3 that I really wanted anyway.
Yeah. All right. So how about some audio hardware news? Now, a few episodes ago, it might have even been a couple of months ago at this point, we were talking about Sonos. And, you know, we've talked about Sonos a lot and how great Sonos is as a nice wireless distributed multi-room audio setup. And it's great. Everyone loves Sonos who has it. It's a little pricey, but it works really well. And then we discussed how then Google's Chromecast audio or Chromecast music, whatever the heck they're calling that thing now, had come out. And that seemed like a really nice solution that could potentially be a lot cheaper than Sonos. But again, like Sonos, not really usable by Windows Phone people or I guess you could kind of use it from a Windows PC via Chrome browser, but you kind of want to do this stuff from a phone and you can't. None of those options are available from Windows Phone. So we were discussing how pretty much your only option as a Windows Phone person is Bluetooth, and that while there are lots of great individual Bluetooth speakers out there, there weren't really any well-known, if any, multi-room audio setup solutions based on Bluetooth. And well, now there's at least one, and it's from Philips. This is their Izzy line, Izzy, and it's exactly that. It is a Bluetooth-based multi-room wireless audio system. So the way this works is you buy one speaker, and that acts as like your master speaker. You connect to it from your device with Bluetooth. That means pretty much any device in the universe, and it also means pretty much any music or audio source in the universe. This is a big downside to Sonos. You can only use what's available from the Sonos app with Sonos. With Bluetooth,
I don't know that that's entirely true, because you can have it play your music library if you have ripped files on a server or computer somewhere.
Sure, but what if I want to play Netflix through it?
Right, yeah.
What if I want to play my podcast through it?
Yeah, right. You can't do that. You can do it, but you need a wire.
Well, right. Which kind of defeats the purpose. So, that's always been one downside to the Sonos ecosystem in my mind. Whereas with Bluetooth, it's anything, because it just streams whatever audio is coming out of your device wirelessly to the speaker. So it works just like a regular Bluetooth speaker. Then where the interesting part comes in is you can buy other speakers in this line from Philips that will then wirelessly connect to the master speaker. And it's wireless, but we don't actually know the protocol. I don't think it's Bluetooth. I think it's something else, but they haven't said what the protocol is or radio technology is that connects the speakers together. But you can have up to 5 other speakers hooked up to this thing. And it just works. And it's really simple. No apps required. There's basically just a linking button on the speaker. So you start listening on one speaker, you go to another speaker, and you press that link button, and now that one's playing. It sounds really, really simple. And they also have a range of speakers that they're going to make available. There's already one available now, and it's the BM5. It's the entry level option to this lineup, but it's not like some tiny little $30 Bluetooth speaker that you might be expecting. No, this is a bigger speaker. It's, you know, about 6 inches by 4 inches wide. I mean, it's not quite as big as the Sonos Play One, but it's a decent size, and that's going to run you about $130. Then they've got a few more. There's the BM6, the BM7. And the BM50, I'm not sure why they changed the numbering scheme so much there, but the 6 and 7, they're both a little bit bigger than the 5. The 6 is also portable. It has a battery in it, and it's waterproof, which makes it great for the kitchen or the bathroom or maybe out by the pool. And then the
neither of which is offered by Sonos.
Oh, that's true. And none of those are I was going to say wireless, but like portable, right?
Yeah, none of them.
So that's another advantage there. And then the BM50 is the largest one and also has a CD player and a radio tuner in it, if you would want
one of those. A CD player?
I know, isn't that crazy?
That's so cute.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure why I would want the CD player, but maybe someone does. So all of this sounds really good. Now, we only have pricing on the BM5. We don't have any pricing information on the 6, 7, or 50, but they're all supposed to come out this spring, except for, like I said, the BM5 is available now. You can get it on Amazon today. And I don't know, this sounds like a really nice solution to me. What do you think, Richard? You're the Sonos guy.
Yeah, I know. I am so stuck on Sonos. I don't imagine ever changing that given how much I've invested in it now. But what I want in something like this, just because it would be so cool, I want a follow me feature.
Oh.
I want to have a setting on it so that it is on wherever I am in the house. And if I'm not there, it's not on. And that only works under certain use cases. I get it. But for that use case, like you live alone or you're home alone, that would be awesome.
That would be really cool. That would be really neat. I would think that for that to work, it would probably need to do Bluetooth at all of the, I guess what you'd call like the slave speakers, not the master speaker. And I don't know if that's how they communicate with each other, you know, but it would have to do Bluetooth from all of those speakers to your phone to know that you're near them. But that's a cool idea. I like it. You could be a millionaire with that idea.
Well, yeah, I'm sure someone else has patented it. We just haven't seen it yet.
Right.
I mean, it's got to be possible, right?
Well, yeah, sure. It doesn't seem like it would be that hard to do even. You get within range, it starts playing.
Yeah, so someone get on that.
Yeah, I like that idea. And then share some of the royalties with us. All right, so let's move on to some gaming news. Perhaps the most interesting news, and this just hit, is that Amazon is trying to get into the sort of discount game purchase program. I don't even know what exactly to call this, but this is another feature that they're putting into Amazon Prime. And all it is if you want to purchase a physical game, say an Xbox game, you can buy it through Amazon Prime for 20% off, which sounds phenomenal. Now, there are some stipulations. You have to either be pre-ordering a game or you have to purchase the game within 2 weeks of it coming out. That's what makes this a little bit different than their biggest competitor, and that would be Best Buy's Gamers Club Unlocked. Gamers Club Unlocked, which is what I use, allows you to get 20% off any game anytime. I could go out and buy Halo 5 today, you know, the game's been out for a couple of months now, and get it for 20% off.
Right.
If I was doing this through Amazon Prime, it wouldn't be 20% off for me anymore because I'm outside of that 2 week window. The other benefit to Gamers Club Unlocked is that you get that 20% off when you pre-order, but most of the games that you would pre-order, you also end up getting a $10 gift card for. So if it's a $60 AAA game, I can pre-order it for $48 and get a $10 gift card.
Okay, but how much do you pay for that?
You have to pay $30 for 2 years.
All right, and for all intents and purposes, nobody's going to get Amazon Prime for this. So this is free.
Correct.
And the restriction is that when you probably most want the game, which is before it comes out, and right when it's initially out is the only time you can get the discount. That doesn't sound so terrible to me.
There are also some other benefits to Gamers Club Unlocked. They're not super significant. Like you get an additional bonus on trade-ins and you get discounts on strategy guides and things like that. But definitely the main thing is 20% off on games. And I don't know, like, yes, your logic is bad, but like, let's say it's the fourth quarter when all of the games come out. And you don't want to buy all of them because you can't afford to buy all of the games that you want in November. So you're going to play Call of Duty and Fallout for November and December. And then you want to come back in January and pick up Halo. Well, sorry. Now you can't get it for 20% off anymore.
Well, you could have pre-ordered. You'd have to save your money yourself because it's all going to hit at the same time. Right. I don't know. I see how it's not as good as other clubs, but this just seems like Amazon throwing Prime members more good stuff, and I can't complain about that.
No, there's absolutely nothing to complain about here. Like you said, it's costing you essentially nothing, and you're getting 20% off on brand new video games. So that's great. I just think that it's not quite as great as Gamers Club Unlock.
Yeah, it's not the same as some of the other programs that are out
right.
there.
Okay, so that's it for Amazon Prime. Let's move on to this week's Deals with Gold and the Xbox Spotlight sale. A smaller number of titles available this week, and it's mostly Forza related. This is like the Josh Pollard Deals with Gold week, apparently. They've got an interesting bundle that includes Forza Horizon 2 and Forza Motorsport 5, which I don't know why this wouldn't include Forza Motorsport 6, but regardless, you can get both of those together for $55, which I thought seemed expensive. But, you know, considering that Forza 5 is now 2 years old and Forza Horizon 2 is over a year old, this seemed pretty pricey. But then I went to Amazon and looked up these games, and you know, you can get Forza 5 for pretty cheap, but Forza Horizon 2 is still going for like $45 or more. So maybe this isn't such a bad bundle if you're interested in those games. And let me tell you, Forza Horizon 2 is fantastic. And if you haven't played it and you're into racing at all, like Forza Horizon 2 is not a hardcore racing sim. It is a much more just fun and relaxed open world driving game. That's just, it's so much fun. Definitely worth checking out. On the Xbox 360 side, the only one that looked interesting to me is NBA Jam on Fire Edition. It ought to be interesting to me because I bought it like a month and a half ago. And the game itself is a blast, but it's also important to know that it's backwards compatible. I don't pull out my 360 to play NBA Jam. I play this on my Xbox One and love it. So that's only going to set you back about $5. So if you grew up playing the NBA Jam games on Sega Genesis or Super Nintendo like I did, grab NBA Jam on Fire Edition. It's a ton of fun for $5. And then one other quick gaming-related news story. There's a big AAA shooter coming out this spring called Homefront: The Revolution. And while we don't normally just talk about video game release dates and things like that, the interesting thing here is that while this game is coming out on Xbox One and PlayStation 4, they're doing a closed beta in February. This is going to be an online co-op beta, and that's only going to be available to Xbox One customers. So we're going to have a link to this in the show notes where you can go in and sign up to hopefully get access to the closed beta for Homefront: The Revolution, and you could be playing this a couple of months before it even comes out.
What's their motivation for doing that?
It's usually these betas are multiplayer betas, and it's just to get everything ironed out with their servers to make sure that all the multiplayer code is going to hold up to a whole bunch of people playing at once.
Okay, so it actually offers them something of a soft launch opportunity.
Exactly. What I think a lot of people look at these betas now as, well, this is the demo. Because most of the big games are doing this now. And it's a great way to check out a game before you buy it.
Yeah, very cool. All right. Well, that's it for our Microsoft news this week. But we have a bunch of other industry news because we didn't get to cover everything at CES. When we recorded last week, it's hard to believe we were only a day into CES. And 3 days followed, so we had a lot more time to find out more about the announcements there, to talk with more vendors. And I remember that last week, in our episode, we talked about the Dish Hopper 3, and I'm kind of blown away by the concept of having 16 tuners in it. And we wondered, is it 16 real tuners, or is this Primetime Anywhere tuner math? It's 16 real tuners.
That's bonkers.
It is bonkers. Now, if you think about it, you know, we say, oh, there's no way that you'd be able to run out. Now, they support up to 6 extenders. So in theory, you could have 7 things going at any one time. And on the Hopper itself, you could have your, what is it called? The sports bar mode. You could have that running. That takes 4 tuners, right? So right there, now you have 10 tuners going just to power your 6 Joeys and your Hopper in sports bar mode. And, oh, well, you know, you're okay because you have 6 tuners left to record stuff. Love it.
Yep, that's phenomenal. I love it.
Now, also, while I was there, I had a really interesting meeting with folks from Lenovo, and they were showing off that Idea Center projector unit that we talked about last week. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I didn't know about that when I saw it at Unveiled, but learned about it when we actually had some hands-on time with it, is that that projector connects through a proprietary connector that sits at the top of the computer, but it's magnetic. So it has this incredibly satisfying, like, click into place, and it almost guides itself into place the way the top of it is designed and sloped. So really nice industrial design on that one.
Nice. Magnets make everything more fun.
Yeah, they do, except your credit card. So another thing that we saw there was a new Lenovo X1 Yoga. Now, we've talked about the Yoga before. It's a convertible PC, meaning that it can be a laptop, you can fold it over, and it can act as a tablet. Or you could have something like a tent mode where it actually just stands on its side and you can use that to give presentations or watch video or what have you. Now, why do I care so much about this? I care about this because this has the most beautiful display I've ever seen on a tablet anywhere. It has an OLED display, and it's the only convertible PC that has an OLED display today.
That sounds glorious.
It was unbelievable. I mean, and they gave the presentation to us in a darkened conference room. So we're looking at these screens, and all of, you know, the Lenovos have nice displays, and all of the displays, you can see the backlight bleeding a little bit through the displays, but you don't even notice it until they showed us the Yoga, and it's just pure black and then amazing color. Now, these things are going to start at $1,500, and it's a $200 additional cost for the OLED display. If you're looking at this as a computer that you are seriously considering for yourself, don't even look at this without the OLED. $200. Just do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're already looking at laptops that start at $1,500, then it's hard not to just make that jump up to the OLED display.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, it also comes with Dolby Audio, which significantly enhances the audio for Dolby encoded content. So if you're using this as a media machine, you know, maybe you use this to watch stuff at your computer, at your desk, maybe you use it on travel, that gives a great audio experience. They had some demonstrations of that, and I was pretty blown away by those as well. It has an optional LTE radio that you can get in it so that you can be entirely wireless. It has an 8 to 10 hour battery life, and it also, I believe, is compatible with their, I forget what they call it, something like a gig box or something, which is essentially a wireless dock. So you can dock this thing with all these other connectors through this really high speed, hyper local wireless connector.
You're thinking Y-Gig. That's the name of that
Y-Gig protocol. Y-Gig. There we go. Yeah. Gigbox, Y-Gig, whatever. So it was awesome. And if I were a PC guy still, I would be buying one of these. I love it. I'm not kidding. I think this is an amazing, amazing computer.
Huh. It's interesting that they've taken the Yoga so much further up market. I mean, when the Yoga line first launched, gosh, was that 4 years ago now?
Something like that. You know,
they started at $999 and now they're starting at $1,500 and really, let's just be honest here. They start at $1,700 because, like you said, don't get it without the OLED.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Very cool.
Now, we also saw some really interesting projectors this year. You know, laser projectors are becoming a big thing in theaters. And so different companies are coming out with laser projectors for home theater. Sony showed some beautiful projectors where they were projecting content in a home theater environment or even just like in a living room on a white wall. And I have to say, the pictures on these things are pretty amazing. Now, I can't get past the idea of your darkest dark is white, right? I mean, there's still that thing going on with any projection system if you're not actually starting in a darkened theater environment. But the concept is really cool. And one of the things that they were really showcasing was that with these laser projectors, they could do what's known as a short throw projection, where they could have a projection even as big as, like, you know, 100 inches diagonal or even larger, projected from something that's literally 2 feet away from the wall, or a small box that could sit on your desktop and project a screen onto the wall behind your desk rather than having a monitor. And this box could be 6 inches from the wall, and you essentially get the equivalent of a 30-inch diagonal monitor. So they're doing some really clever things there.
Were they talking pricing for any of those?
So the short throw large screen projector for the living room is something that already exists. And if you go to their website, it's call for information. So you know what that means, right?
Oh, yeah.
That means you can't afford it. The short throw desktop is something that they are not announcing pricing for, but those are expected to be available mid-year. So hopefully we'll get more information before they actually come out.
Okay, cool.
And then finally, I had a chance to see the latest in the LG OLEDs in person. And yeah, they're as beautiful as we thought they would be. So I'm really, I don't want to say eager to get an OLED TV because I have a beautiful plasma that I don't want to get rid of. But when I need to get a new TV, this is what I'm going to be looking at. They're just absolutely amazing. Now, speaking of my plasma, that's a Panasonic. And we know that Panasonic is well known for their television technology. I couldn't find one television at their booth.
Not one?
Not one.
That's crazy. I mean, they were the booth that we would go to see amazing TVs year after year after year.
Yeah. It was nuts. Now, they did have concept stuff on display. Like, they were showing concepts of large displays that could be used in stadiums because they're making a big play. You know, they already have the presence in stadiums. So they're really playing that up and playing into the IoT and community area there. They had a concept of what had to have been an OLED on glass that you could see through that was kind of mounted in front of some shelves that had things on them, and the shelves were lighted. So the effect was that you saw through the glass to the stuff on the lighted shelves, and then, oh, by the way, we're going to turn this on and it's a display. And so they could show you could actually see TV imaging, perfect TV imaging. It's not like you were seeing through it. It was actually, you know, perfect imagery on this flat glass, but it was all concept. Like, it wasn't real yet.
Hmm.
So Yeah, if they had a TV there, it was well hidden. That's not what they cared to show people.
That's unfortunate.
Really, really weird. I don't get it. But, you know, overall, I think it was an unusual CES. I think it was a show where we saw an evolution and maturing of certain markets. We saw more 4K, and it's as beautiful as it was before. We saw more OLEDs. They look better than they did before. We saw some great laptops. We saw lots of light bulbs. We saw connected cameras from absolutely everybody. Not a whole lot that was crazy new. You know, not any significant new innovations this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it sounds like. And that's okay every once in a while. You're going to have those years where it's more evolution than revolution. And I think we expected that going into this year.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
All right. So another segment that we skipped last week was what's going on in our entertainment centers. So we've got in quite a backlog of things we've been watching and playing and doing, I would imagine. So why don't we start it off as usual with you? What's going on in your entertainment center, Richard?
All right. Well, right before the holiday, I had tickets for Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and I didn't go.
What?
And I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, I guess if you weren't going to be able to make it that day with the craziness of the holidays plus CES, you weren't gonna do it.
So. Yeah, I wasn't able to go, and it's just been too nuts. So what I have been doing is I've been watching the old episodes. I think I mentioned that before. I think last time I had only watched the episode one, and yes, I'm watching all of them, and yes, I'm watching them by story chronology. I'm only up to three. So I want to continue. What I really might have to do again, I might have to watch three again, which is going to kill me. But I might have to watch three again, because what I really wanted to see all along was, how is the story transition from three to four? How well do they handle that? And how, you know, are there some big glaring, wait a minute, that was a little bit different kind of moments? And I know that there's been lots of stuff blogged about that, but I just wanted to see it for myself.
Sure.
So I may go back and do that again. And then once I've seen them all and the crowds have died down and, you know, it's made its first billion, then I'll go see the movie.
You don't have to rewatch all of episode three. You can just watch the last 20 minutes.
Well, in doing that, all I'm really getting is like angry Anakin yelling and screaming and moaning. And I mean, that's pretty much what the last hour of that movie is, unfortunately.
Yeah, pretty much.
Having an adult temper tantrum. Movie drives me crazy. Anyway, so other stuff that I've been watching, Homeland finished. So I finished that, and that was a good season, I think. I think they really redeemed themselves after kind of a weird one last year. Daredevil, that's been over for a long time because it all came out at once, but I finished that first season, and now the new season is going to start in March. I really, really liked that, and now I want to watch, is it Jenny Jones or Jesse Jones?
Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones. Yeah, want to watch that. Also, keeping with the Marvel theme, I watched Ant-Man. That was so much fun. I really, really enjoyed that movie. We both enjoyed it and didn't know what to expect. We knew it had good reviews, but yeah, I liked it. And then on a little bit of a lighter note, also watched Minions, which was, you know, cute. I'm still not done Boston Legal, so I went back to that. And now I've hit another period where my recordings have failed for some reason. So now I've sent out for another DVD, and I'm going to be watching more episodes on DVD. Shameless, one of my favorite Showtime series, started season six this week. And so I watched that just last night, and that just does not disappoint. I love that show. It is so uncomfortable and so not appropriate for family viewing. And I really enjoy it. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing. I haven't done anything to make changes or updates to my system recently. I do still have the Harmony Elite that I have not set up yet. I'm hoping to get that done this weekend.
Okay, cool. Can't wait to hear about that. All right, so for me, unlike you, I watched Star Force The Force Awakens. Star Wars The Force Awakens. Not once, but twice. And I like it. And I can't wait to see your reaction when... Never mind. Just kidding. No, it's good. Probably better than all of the episodes 1 through 3. Probably better than episodes 1 through 3 put together. But that's still not saying much. It's good. Definitely check that out as soon as you can. Also, have been watching the Star Wars movies with my daughter, Eden. She's now 7, almost 8. She, of course, had zero interest in watching them when I was rewatching episodes 4, 5, and 6 prior to 7 coming out. She didn't want to start watching them until Christmas break, but okay, I guess I can watch them again. So sat down, watched all of 4, 5, and 6 with Eden, finished that up, finished episode 6 this weekend with her. It's so fun to watch with someone who's never seen it before, you know, because the whole time through episode 4, she's like, oh, Luke and Leia are totally going to fall in love. And you're like, nope, that's actually pretty gross. Not going to happen. But of course, you can't say that. Like, you just have to wait to see her reaction. You know, so you get to the end of episode 5 and just watching her reaction when Darth Vader tells Luke that he's his father was awesome. And then in
spoilers.
And then in episodes, I'm not going to worry about spoiling episodes 4 through 6 of Star Wars, not with this audience. And then seeing her reaction near the beginning of episode 6, where you find out that Luke and Leia are brother and sister, she loved that. So she really enjoyed episode 4, 5, and 6. So we finished 6 on Saturday, and she says, all right, let's watch episode 1. And I'm like, are you sure? We don't have to, and we don't have to start it today. No, I want to watch episode 1. All right, then we're doing this. Like, you're committed now. We're watching episode 1. She was so bored. Like, every 15 minutes, Dad, this is so boring. Can we just skip to episode 2? But and like, for the first half hour, you don't even see Anakin. When are we going to see Anakin, Dad? She's so bored. We haven't even finished episode 1 yet. And I don't think she wants to, but that kid, she has to suffer through it the way the rest of us did.
It's so funny. I just don't think that one is as bad as everybody gives it credit for. If anything, I probably like that one better than 2 or 3.
See, I don't remember 2 or 3 all that well, but yeah, I'm bored watching episode 1. So I'm hoping, oh crap, this probably won't be the last time I watch episode 1. Because eventually, Gia might want to see these movies. So I'm going to have to suffer through episode 1 again at some point in my life. All right, so did all that. Also, introduced Eden to her first PG-13 movie ever over Christmas break. And that was Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is...
such a great movie.
Yeah, one of my all-time favorite movies. We ended up watching it twice over Christmas break. I love that movie. There's a sex scene that I fast forwarded through, and I made her close her eyes when the dude gets the weird sword blade thingy stuck in his head and dies. Cause I didn't figure she really needed to see that part, but the rest of it is pretty kid safe. I mean, there's lots of sword fighting, obviously, but it's not like Kill Bill where people are just gushing buckets of blood out of their limbs or anything like that. So it was good. In terms of TV, we finally got caught up on Quantico. Really, really enjoying that show.
Okay. Yeah,
it's great. We're all caught up. It's on mid-season hiatus until March. Cannot wait for that show to start up again. Also watched, I guess it would be the first 2 episodes, although it's really just one big premiere, I guess, of The Expanse.
Right.
It's good. I'm gonna stick with it. It's not like
really
phenomenal, but I'm gonna give it a few more episodes.
Yeah, No.
I'm not sure.
It doesn't have me.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm gonna keep trying. And then it's one of my favorite times of the year for motorsports. This is the period of the 2 week long Dakar rally, which goes like all the way across South America. Absolutely love this rally. It's an event that I watch with Eden every year. There's always a half hour recap show on TV every day for 2 weeks straight. And it's a nice quick thing to watch in the evening if I have time, or something that I can plow through watching a few days worth at a time in the evening if I get a little bit behind. And I just love it. It's a great rally to watch. So
cool.
That's it for me on everything that I'm watching. Like you, I didn't do any hardware stuff over the last few weeks. Fairly satisfied with the way everything's working in my house, and kind of keep it that way until we get some better options, like that HD Home Run DVR stuff.
Exactly. All right. Well, that is it for our show. We have one quick announcement before we wrap up. At CES, Mike Wolff asked me to be one of his guests on the Smart Home Show, which he recorded live on the floor at CES. It was a lot of fun, actually. And I was the first of his guests. He also had the CEO of Anova, the CMO of Beta, and the global VP of Wemo from Belkin. So a great lineup. I felt way outclassed there, but it was a lot of fun, and you can check that out at technology.fm.
Well, you shouldn't feel outclassed. I already listened to that episode, and it was great, and you did phenomenal, like always.
Thank you.
All right, well, if you want to get a hold of us, you can do that in a bunch of ways, including Twitter. I'm at Josh Pollard. Richard is at Richard Gunther. The website is just at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. We're on Google Plus. We can be reached via email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. You can also check out other podcasts from the DMZ, like Richard's other show, Home On. What's going on with Home On?
So at CES, we always do show floor interviews. I think I have 8 or 9 this time. We're going to get them all into one episode, and it should be out by the time this show is out. We talked with some great folks, Hunter Fan, Zuli, the Stack Lighting folks. Stack is not dead. It's coming soon. In fact, it's actually shipping to backers right now. So lots of good interviews. I think people will really enjoy it.
All right, cool. I'm definitely looking forward to that. And if you, obviously you're listening to at least this podcast, if you're listening to any of our podcasts from the DMZ, the best way that you can show your appreciation to us is by just leaving us some feedback or a rating over at iTunes. But you can find all of these shows pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts: iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and soon, hopefully, maybe Google Play if you're on the Google ecosystem. And then if you're really looking for some fun, come back and listen to us live. We record this show typically Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. You can stream it live while we're recording, and there's a chat room so you can talk with us while we're doing it also. It's a lot of fun. We love it. Everyone who shows up for it seems to love it because they keep coming back. So hopefully we will see you on the next time that we record the show in the chat room. Well, that's going to do it for episode 354. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next time for episode 355. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.